partisan school board elections, the House GOP's tax cut package, plus Trey Hollingsworth bows out, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 14th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, legislation lawmakers are considering would force school board candidates to declare a political party. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports everyone who spoke at the bill's first hearing opposed the measure.
House Bill 1182 would require school board candidates to identify with a political party and include that designation on the ballot. The bill's author, Republican Representative J.D. Prescott, says he believes it would give voters more insight into candidates' beliefs.
You know, when I look at Republicans or Democrats, I think you can tell a difference between financial responsibility, moral character in some cases.
But public comment included only opposition to the idea. The Indiana School Boards Association suggested communities that might want that change can and should do so locally. ISBA and others said party affiliation could actually reduce voters' awareness of where candidates stand on issues and limit qualified candidates' interest in and access to school board races.
Should school board candidates declare a party? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, is making school board races more partisan a good idea?
Well, we might find out in a few months. We'll see what the legislature decides. But there are reasons to do this. It does give you a hint into what where a candidate may be generally, if you understand their party affiliation. School boards do have broad authority over large amounts of tax dollars. But on the other hand, subjecting these guys to part of the, if you just read the bill, I mean, it being a part of the partisan election process is a really is not an easy thing, is a complicated thing. It's particularly complicated. I'm a former county chairman, and we rarely had school board candidates or members of school boards who were involved in the county party organizations. And this bill necessarily, in Indiana, if you're going to be identified to run for office as a partisan in either party, county chairmen have pretty broad authority to decide whether or not that's true if you've not participated in primary elections, like many school board members do not, for this exact reason. They view themselves as nonpartisan. That's not to say that there aren't areas of the state and parts of the state that are endorsed by partisan organizations, that receive campaign dollars from partisan organizations. So I understand why it's such a gray area. Frankly, I'm trying to decide exactly where I personally land on this. As a partisan guy, maybe a good half measure is the tagging and identifying candidates in the general election and what party they affiliate with, keep them out of the straight ticket voting matrix like we've done with other local officials. But there's no single right answer. And one more of the more amusing testimonies from the other day was a Republican from a Democrat area who basically said, if you make me declare that I'm a Republican, I'm not going to get reelected. So there could be unintended consequences with this. No federal employee, for example, could seek that kind of office. Yeah. For violations of those laws. So it's a more complicated thing than just figuring out if you're pro-choice or, you know, pro-school choice or pro-teacher funding and pro-salaries and all this stuff. It's not quite that simple, just throwing them into a partisan designation.
Ann Delaney, pretty much the same question. Should these races become partisan?
How about no? Okay. I mean, this is an attempt on the part of this representative, I guess is what I would call him, to make these local school board elections national. They want to know who doesn't believe in science, who doesn't believe in evolution, who doesn't believe in democracy, who doesn't believe in fair elections, and who supports Donald Trump. That's what this is all about, is an attempt to pack the school boards with trumpets who don't frankly even believe in public education. But most of them are all pro-choice and want to divert more of the dollars from the 92% of the population that go to public schools. That's what this is all about. It has nothing to do with moral character. as if you can tell that by what party affiliation you have, with the possible exception of some Republicans, of course. But I mean, it is a very, very, very bad, very divisive idea. And it is, you know, the typical kind of nonsense that Republicans pull as they're going into an election and they're worried about party primaries. They want to show that they're more to the right than Attila the Hun. So they're the ones who deserve to carry the banner into the fall election. And it's a very bad idea.
Nikki Kelly, you have been at the State House longer than I have. I've been at the State House for a while. We've gone to plenty of hearings where testimony was overwhelmingly in favor of a bill or overwhelmingly opposed to a bill, but not, I mean, how unusual is it for every single person, and there were about 20, to say this is a bad idea?
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, usually the author of a bill has some support out there who will come and testify. And the irony I found sitting there listening was, the irony was that the lawmakers who were pushing the bill kept saying, well, we're bringing this bill because these school boards aren't listening to their voters and their constituents. And I thought to myself, well, all these people are against the bill and I don't think they're going to listen to them. So, I mean, I think you can, one testifier said it right. He said, you know, just because we don't agree with them and change our path doesn't mean they're not listening.
John Schwanes, Mike O'Brien talked about unintended consequences. Some of them you can foresee, some of them you can't, but is that enough of a reason that you think this bill might be put away?
Well, there are a lot of reasons, probably, if you want to get right down to it, why the bill should be put away. You know, I understand the politics behind it. That's been articulated here. But the optics, it seems to me, are horrible. Because here you have, we'll stipulate that schools are infused with politics. In fact, the State House would probably be, you know, good farm team training for people, you know, on school boards. It's hyper-political there. I get that. However, we don't often explicitly state it or try to go out of our way to insert partisan politics in it. So at a time when we say we should get politics out of education, what matters most is what, you know, parents and kids need and what teachers can deliver. And we're going to actually go from at least the stated nonpartisan aspect of this, which again, we'll say is just stated. I know it lurks below the surface, but to insert partisan politics seems to be an unnecessary step and one that, as you point out, Brandon and Mike, may have unintended consequences down the road.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, should local school board candidates have to declare a political party? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, will state lawmakers' efforts to address school curriculum have a negative effect on how teachers talk about race and other big topics? 83% of you say it will. 17% say no. And we just found out today that one of those school curriculum bills, I think, was killed off by the Senate Republican caucus. We'll talk more about that next week, certainly. But if you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, a major tax cut package that will eventually cost the state $1 billion a year easily cleared a House committee this week. Republicans also rejected every proposed change to the bill made by Democrats. The measure includes a mix of business tax cuts, eliminates certain taxes on utility ratepayers, and lowers the state's individual income tax over the next few years down to 3%. Business groups lined up in support, including the Indiana Manufacturers Association.
These multi-state companies, where are they going to spend their dollars moving forward? And if we can drive down the cost of that investment in Indiana, that's what's going to keep that investment, those jobs, here in Indiana and growing.
Local government advocates worry about a loss of revenue in the future. Democrats' proposals for the bill included increasing the renter's deduction and the earned income tax credit, a sales tax exemption for feminine hygiene products and diapers, and a child care tax credit. Representative Cherish Pryor says Republicans are ignoring Hoosiers who need the most help.
The more money that we're putting in the pockets of people who are low income, that money immediately goes back into the income.
The bill is now before the full House. And Delaney, you said on the show before you think Republicans' only idea is tax cuts. But Democrats proposed some tax cuts of their own in those amendments this week. So what is the right tax cut package in your mind?
Well, there is no right tax cut package. The only reason the Democrats proposed those amendments is because the bill in an election year was going to pass. And they wanted to make it more beneficial to more Hoosiers who need the help. But nobody, no Democrat, and myself included, thinks that cutting taxes now is a good idea. When you're in a non-budget year, okay, when we're not supposed to be spending money in a non-budget year that hasn't already been allocated, in my house, if I cut my income, it has the same impact on my budget as if I spend too much. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're talking about all that CARES money that came into the state via President Biden. All that money was designed to help Hoosiers, okay? And what we're doing here, when we have needs in education and higher education and infrastructure and health and teacher salaries, all of these things that we need to do preschool with this money to make it easier and nicer and healthier to be a Hoosier, we're not doing. And the governor says, well, he'll put it off till next year. What they're doing is if they cut the taxes now, they're going to make sure that when the time comes to have a real debate on which taxes should be cut, which we're not having, but if you wanted to have that debate and what expenditures can be made, they're going to then say there isn't enough money. And we know when a recession comes, you can't raise taxes, according to them, because it's the worst time to do it. And when you have money, you can't spend it. You have to cut it. It is the same kind of one note, no vision strategy that they've pursued for years. We need to invest in the future of this state. We have an opportunity to do that now. We really do, with real dollars. And instead, they're rushing to get the money out the door so they don't have to spend it on anything that will meaningfully impact Hoosier lives. And it's sad.
Mike O'Brien, a lot of this bill is aimed at businesses. And even one of those business cuts, we talked about the local government advocates saying they're worried about future revenue. Well, that cut would also shift some of the burden of taxes, property taxes, onto homeowners and farmers. Is this bill a little too focused on businesses and not enough on a broader range of Hoosiers?
First, I appreciate the honesty from Ann that Democrats under no circumstances support a tax cut.
I did
the other day was just a partisan trick. I do wish as Republicans would spend a little more time focused on things like the renter subsidy, focused on tax cuts on feminine products and diapers. I think those are school supplies. Republicans would propose those in the past. I do wish we'd focus on some of those one-off measures that would really help people. I think this will be rebalanced as session goes on. All leaders have suggested and made clear that they don't want to harm locals. They don't want a big shift in the tax burden. So I think between the House and the Senate and the governor, they're gonna figure that out. And to Ann's comment or comparison to cutting your income, this is a example of our income is way up, and Republicans are balancing that between huge increases in K-12 spending, $2 billion over, which is 2 to 3 times what they had originally proposed. But when faced with record new revenue,
that's all it does is catches up.
They moved $2 billion back into K-12 education. So in this kind of increase in new revenue, they are balancing this between record increases in spending, and now they're trying to rebalance that with a cut in taxes.
John Schwanis, as Republicans, if you're a House Republican and you want to sell this to Hoosiers right now, it is a little balanced more towards businesses than a broader range of people right now. But are enough Hoosiers going to notice if House Republicans just go say, we're going to cut taxes by $1 billion?
Well, clearly the thinking, the strategy here is that being an election year is a time when you want to be able to go to voters and say those magic words, we cut your taxes. And if anybody thinks that that is not selling the public on that sort of one-line campaign slogan is not at the core of this, well, then they ignored the fact that there was discussion this week about whether the cut in the personal income tax should be 3% as suggested, or maybe 2.95, because every retailer knows that come sales season, you know, you always have 2.99 sounds a whole lot better, you know, in pricing than a 3%, not in the cut, but the level of taxation that one would pay on income in the state. So there's clearly that tells me, and I already knew it, but there is what lurks here is a desire to to market this. And one other thing I'd point out is the legislature is the bastion of inconsistency in many ways, and times change. But last year, despite some of the large expenditures that Mike mentioned, the mantra among a lot of Republicans in the House especially was, we can't invest in ongoing programs, but only want to do one-time things, because if you invest on something in an ongoing basis, you're locked in.
You don't know if the income is there.
It seems to me that in a way that a permanent tax cut is exactly the same thing, just entering from a different door on the other side. You're locking
in. Fiscal irresponsible.
Again, I'm not saying
they're not going to cut. They did make ongoing investments in K-12. Those aren't one-time. Those weren't like one-time.
Yeah, and all it does,
that was
Mike,
the bottom line.
No, but the
teacher salary increases, which is all we've seen this year. Yeah. And those are permanent.
Nikki, I want to ask you the $1 billion tax cut proposal. And again, $1 billion eventually. But how much of that do you think survives once this bill gets over to the Senate?
Gosh, I don't know. I do hope, one thing I did notice and is it seems like House Republicans came in with this set package. And I do hope, whether it's with the Senate or someone else, that they are open to other ideas, because they just knocked everything down. I mean, everyone agrees we have a childcare problem and it's holding our economy back, but they didn't even offer a reason why they would support a childcare tax credit. That's, an example of kind of a small thing. So I hope at least that if we're going to do $1 billion, there's a discussion about what the right package is, instead of just kind of moving this exact, four or five cuts that they decided on through.
All right. Well, Indiana's 9th District Congressman Trey Hollingsworth announced this week that he will not seek re-election in 2022. In an Indianapolis Star op-ed, Hollingsworth called out the Washington establishment and reiterated previous public positions on lobbying restrictions and term limits. The Republican also hinted at a run for future office, saying the district deserves a member of Congress totally and completely focused on the 9th District, and that he will fight for the district in different ways. In a statement, Indiana Democratic Party spokesperson Drew Anderson referenced a potential Hollingsworth gubernatorial run, saying he would try to buy his way into the office. Nikki Kelly, we're already seeing a ripple effect of this decision at the State House, right?
Yeah, not even a day passed before State Senator Erin Houchin announced she would run for that race. And because she's, up in the Senate, that means she's leaving the Senate. She won't be seeking re-election there. I have been hearing in recent months more Republicans behind the scenes talking about Hollingsworth. So it'll be interesting with how many Republicans we have on. I mean, from a reporter standpoint, I mean, he would be sort of an enigma for a candidate because, even though he's been in Congress, he's been, kind of quiet, and we really don't know where he would stand on a lot of issues, facing state government.
And Houchin had run for that seat alongside Hollingsworth when it came open a few years ago and lost in the primary. So there's another go at that seat now that it's open again for her. John Schwanes, Trey Hollingsworth for governor. There's potentially a lot of people who might be running for governor as Republicans in 2024. Do you think he makes sense?
I'm surprised Ann didn't use the line running for governor of what state. Of course,
she hasn't spoken yet.
I haven't talked yet.
She'll get there.
I just gave you a line then, I'm sure. Tennessee Trey was what Democrats labeled him, Ann and others, in his initial bid for Congress. And this has to do, of course, with residency and where his roots really are and where his passions really are. I don't know if that will be, if Democrats will try to beat him with that. I mean, he has, one could say, established his bona fides as a Hoosier representing them in Congress. So maybe that fades as an issue. But there would be opportunities, I'm sure, that Democrats would take to forestall a, or maybe not to forestall a bid for governor, but they would use, in fact, if he prevailed buy for that seat in the general election.
Mike O'Brien, if Trey Hollingsworth wants to run for governor, does it make sense then to get out of the House now-ish, by the end of the year, and focus solely on that as opposed to being able to run as a sitting congressperson?
Yeah, I think so. And he's been, he established term limits for himself. I think he's one term short of that, but of that original commitment. But, voters don't love when you're in one office and just gaming for the next one. They're not, you know, there's been several occasions of that in recent history that haven't, you know, where individuals haven't been rewarded with a good outcome. And it allows him to, if he's exploring that, you want to go actually explore it. And you don't want to have to only explore it between Thursday afternoon and Sunday when you're back home, and not out in Washington, D.C. So I think it's a pragmatic move for him. I think he's a guy that was, we'll see what Erin Houchen, who came in second place in that last race, has already announced that she's running in that race, was for her in that that original race, but really got to know Trey and like him a lot. So I'm excited that he's exploring that option to run for governor.
And Delaney, since John Schwanis already took your line about Trey Hollingsworth, I actually want to ask about a different congressional race, in that it looks like we will have a real interesting general election race in the first congressional district, where Frank Mervan just came in, and now Blair Milo, the former mayor from up there and a state official for the last few years, is going to run for the Republicans in that race. Is that one more competitive than it's been in a long time?
Well, I mean, they've tried to nip around the edges with the gerrymandering, but I think Mervan's just going to be fine. And regarding Tennessee Trey, you know, when I look back, he served 4 years, or will be serving 4 years. What are his legislative accomplishments? What has he done for the 9th district? What bills has he co-authored or signed on to? I mean, he's against democracy. He announced that, obviously, with the rest of them, that Joseph Biden wasn't elected president fairly. I mean, on and on and on. And now he wants to parlay that, not even mediocre, that non-record for the 9th district into a statewide election. Good luck with that.
All right. Well, Indiana House Republicans blocked an effort Monday that would have required gun owners to safely store their firearms when a child could access them. Democratic Representative Mitch Gore's language would require gun owners to secure their firearm in one of a few ways, by putting it in a locked container, using a trigger or cable lock, or disassembling it. And Gore's amendment would only make it a crime if the person does none of those things and the child gets a hold of the gun.
Data shows us that if this language is incorporated into Indiana code, we could expect unintentional firearm deaths and suicides among children to decrease by a third.
But Republicans blocked the amendment on procedural grounds. GOP Representative Dan Leonard says Gore's language isn't germane, closely related enough, to a bill that eliminates Indiana's handgun license requirement.
Nowhere in the bill is there anything close to talking about storage.
The House approved the overall measure this week, sending it to the Senate. John Schwanis, if this sort of provision were to come up for a real vote and not one on those procedural grounds, would Republicans have more trouble saying no to it?
There are some Republicans in certain parts of the state. You know, crime hasn't manifested itself in all parts of the state. Some portions are dealing with it and reeling from it more than others. And there are Republicans undoubtedly who represent some of those areas who might have constituencies that might be amenable to that. Now, I don't know if the NRA, for instance, had, I don't want to speak for the NRA, maybe they would find a measure of this type might be acceptable, but what we've heard in the past, let's just use history as a guide, anytime there's any measure, even what could be considered a very modest type of control, is often greeted with cries of slippery slope. You know, we do this session and that's the message, that precedent is set, and then we start carving away at people's Second Amendment rights. So some people probably would, even if it were standalone, would say, absolutely not, un-American and against the Second Amendment, but there might be a few Republicans who could go for it.
And then, Nikki, on the overall bill, it was killed, basically this bill, or a version of it, was killed by the Senate last year. Do you think it's going to happen again this year?
No, it sounds like the Senate's much more open to it. There was some language removed involving a database that was a big problem last year. That's not in the bill. Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Gray said it was a much better bill this year. And in fact, Senator Brown, I think, has a bill almost the same. So I expect it will probably move through the Senate pretty easily.
All right. Well, finally, the Indianapolis Colts season didn't end the way many people were hoping, with the Colts falling to the lowly Jacksonville Jaguars and getting eliminated from playoff contention. Ann Delaney, at whose feet do you lay the blame for the ignominious end to this Colts season?
I think you have to lay it squarely at the feet of the anti-vax Wentz. I mean, that pass that he threw in that game well over T.Y. Hilton's head was just unbelievable.
Mike O'Brien, we have our own problems as Bears fans. Are you feeling a little better now that the coach and GM are gone?
I've been through this. I've seen this movie about 15 times. I'm done celebrating the burning down of the front office of the Chicago Bears. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
I have a quick idea. What if every player has to wear R or D on his uniform?
Then we know his commitment to working hard. Good idea. Wow.
We'd know where they like stand.
Why don't you call that representative
and tell him?
Since the Colts are out, if everyone would like to root for the Bengals tomorrow, I would appreciate that.
Well, we'll be doing that here on Indiana Week in Review. And that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy. Please get vaccinated if you can, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.